Welcome back to Restless. My name is Father Joseph Gill, priest of the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut. You've joined myself and Diane as together we seek the face of Christ restlessly in the midst of today's crazy and mixed up world. And, you know, it seems to me that a large preponderance of saints have died at the young adult age of 24. So, like, I think Pier Giorgio Frassati was 24.
I believe he was.
I think Aloysius Gonzaga, maybe 24. And definitely one that was 24 was St. Thérèse of Lisieux. And even though her feast day has already passed, it was October 1st, nevertheless, she's a great saint to talk about. But I must come with confession. She is not my favorite saint.
Oh.
No. In fact, I know that I'm going to be meeting her in heaven, I hope, God willing, if I get there. And I'm going to have to apologize for how many times I've said I don't particularly care for her as a saint.
I think I've heard that from a few people at this point now.
Really?
Yeah. They say the flowery language of her autobiography is a little much.
Well, yeah. She came from a rich upper crust mm-hmm. family, bourgeoisie, mm-hmm. you know, where have you ever read, I'm sure you've read in your studies, Jane Austen?
No.
You've never read Pride and Prejudice?
No.
Don't worry, spare yourself. Have you ever seen the movie?
No.
Spare yourself. Again, nothing. But to me, Pride and Prejudice is nothing but a story of people going to parties and then gossiping about parties. That's all the whole story is. It's mm-hmm. just gossip. It's 150 pages of gossip. And I'm like, ugh, can't handle this, right? But to me, like, Therese's autobiography is from that same, like, milieu of the very wealthy who don't have to work for a living, really don't suffer that much, and just kind of like, so all the small stuff becomes, like, blown way out of proportion. Now, she did have real suffering, right? Her mom died when she was 4.
Right.
You know, but then, you know, her sister went off to the Carmel convent, and she thought that was the end of the world, and she, like, collapsed and had, like, a mental breakdown. And I'm like, come on, Therese, pull it together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is not the end of the world. Like, look at some of the other saints who, like, had their nails ripped out, okay?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
But obviously, St. Therese resonates with a huge amount of people. So what is it that draws you to St. Therese?
I mean, for me, it's just her simplicity of, you know, she felt that she, and again, this was, I think some people too, the put off of reading this is that she is so saintly, and she's like, no, I'm just so little, I'm so frail, I can't, you know, and I think one priest had said he didn't think that she ever committed a mortal sin.
Not, yeah.
Yeah. But I think the beauty is just her spirituality that, you know, she said that her vocation was to love, you know, and to do the little things in life with extraordinary love, because she did not have an opportunity outside of Carmel to, you know, she wasn't going evangelizing across nations. She wasn't leaving her convent.
Right.
You know, all she could do were the mundane tasks of everyday life with just for the Lord, you know, with extraordinary love for the Lord, for her sisters. And she, I think the other aspect too, is that she really just relied on God's grace in mm. order to do those things. She said that of herself, she was so weak, you know, just not charitable enough, not all of these things. And so I think in her day, the elevator was sort of a new invention.
It was, yeah.
So she uses sort of that, the comparison of, you know, she needed to find a way to heaven, and the easiest way was by an elevator, right? And the elevator was sort of the hands of God mm-hmm. lifting her up to heights that she couldn't reach on her own.
Yes.
And so I think that she gives a lot of encouragement in that we can attain holiness, right? Which the goal of our life is sanctification, that we can attain that in just our everyday lives, and that it doesn't matter how weak we are, that God, like, you know, to give him our will is, in St. Therese's eyes, that's the starting point. That's enough for him to come in and act, like, to want to do something for him, and that he, you know, he rewards that desire.
Yeah. No, I think the core of her spirituality is very important, very rich. This idea that it's not really what you do, but the love with which you do it.
Right.
Because most of us are not called to be famous or do great, amazing things in life, and it does take, I think, a special grace to accept the state in life in which God places you. You know, because I know, you know, when I was, I'm ashamed to admit this, very embarrassed actually, but you know, if you had asked me when I was 12 years old what I wanted to be in life, the answer was Pope.
Pope.
Pope. Yes.
Wow.
In fact, when I was a teenager, my friends called my car the Pope Mobile. Because I was very vocal about, like, you know, let's go to the top. If you're going to do this, like, excel, go all the way in, all the way up. And, you know, it's become very clear that's not in my future, God willing. And now at this point, I would want nothing less than to be the Pope. Or nothing more? Nothing less. Yeah, nothing less. Yeah. But there's kind of a grace to accept and say, you know what? I'm not going to rise above being a pastor. That's like, that's the, you know, as far as I can go for Christ. I can't, probably not going to be a martyr. Probably not going to be a great missionary. I'm really terrible at languages, you know, and much like Therese, you know, so can you accept this as your lot in life and accept this as your path to sanctification?
Yeah. And it's been a while since I've read her book, Story of a Soul. But one of the things I think that she talks about, and she's known for, I believe, spreading, you know, roses.
Yes.
But she talks about all of the different flowers, you know, like God. And it's just, I think it's a nice analogy in the sense that God gives us, like, he loves us all, but I guess one of the things that I've learned from just listening a lot to the Dominicans, particularly Father Gregory Pine, is he talks about how God loves us all, but he loves us all differently. Like, he gives us different graces, right? And so, like, we all are able to manifest and to glorify him, manifest his attributes and glorify him in a way that our neighbor can't. That, you know, like, that we all show something of the divine life, and that if we live a life, you know, conformed to his will, that, it's just an unrepeatable thing. So there is beauty in just kind of accepting but loving where God has placed us, and using every moment for for the purpose of our sanctification and the salvation of other souls.
That's always something I've wrestled with, and I know I've actually even wrestled with it on Restless, no pun intended. but like this idea, especially we hear it in the Litany of Humility, mm-hmm. that others may be holier than I, provided that I may be as holy as I ought. Like, God does love everyone differently.
Yeah.
Not unequally, right? Because his love is infinite and he can't love one person more than another. But at the same time, you know, he does have a beloved disciple out of the other 11.
Yep.
And he does, you know, so I don't know. Like, it's hard not to have spiritual jealousy sometimes. I don't know if you've ever felt that.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's sometimes in the moment, it's hard to understand. Well, you know, like, you just want to have certain virtues or whatever, and it just seems to come more easily to others.
Yeah,
But, you know, I mean, I don't know, the Blessed Virgin Mary, I mean, that's just an example of, look at the grace that she received as opposed to, but, like, he gives us the grace that we need, the right amount of grace that we need in order to become holy. So there's, I guess there's no need for that jealousy or pining after graces, you know, like, that we may never received, or past graces that we didn't use appropriately. It's like, live in the sacrament of the present moment, because God is giving you sufficient grace now to be holy now, to right. carry out his mission now.
And I think in his mysterious plan, even our weaknesses, I hope, are for his glory, mm-hmm. you know. Over the summer, I was backpacking with you know, a group of teens and their dads, and one of the kids and I started this conversation about spiritual direction, and he expressed he's really interested in getting a spiritual director, and he said, well, you know, do you have any suggestions? And he's like, yeah, I want to ask Father so and so who's at this other parish. I said, oh, that's great. And he said, yeah, I'm not going to ask you because you're not very holy.
Ouch.
And, I was like, ouch. You're not wrong, but ouch, right? Right? And I was like, ooh, yeah. And it made me reflect, like, well, what does holiness look like? Like, well, I'm the other priest who I know and very much respect, you know, is much more kind of reserved, like, only almost like, pious mm-hmm. in a really good and beautiful, holy way. And I'm really loud and sometimes obnoxious and make sarcastic jokes and, you know, like to do crazy stuff like cliff jump. And maybe that's not what holiness looks like to some people. You know, But perhaps that's going to be a way in which people can be drawn in through, you know, cliff jumping and sarcastic jokes.
Right. I mean,
I don't know. I hope. I gotta hope.
I'm sure that there's a way that he's using us all. And we have different personalities, right? So the people with whom he places us and sort of the virtues and just every attribute of our personality, I feel like is used, you know, if used well, is for the glory of sort of the kingdom. And I think another beautiful thing that I was attracted to about St. Therese is that people talk about when they go to the convent, to Carmel now, it's like they're always surprised about how small it is and how confined
you know,
the space is. Yeah. Because even the way that she describes it in the book is, you can imagine sort of, at least I do, a bigger place. But yeah, they repeatedly, people say that it's just a very, very small, you know, environment. And so, you know, she had this burning desire to be a missionary. And she, you know, maybe her vision of how that was originally going to play out versus what God had in store, clearly that was different. But I think it's the book is just really beautiful, the way that, you know, that desire was sort of fulfilled in her zeal for saving souls and for bringing souls to Christ. And sort of, I think that was the impetus for a lot of the, you know, the sacrifices that she would make in her daily life in the convent, because she was burning with that love, right?
Yeah.
Her vocation, she said, was to love and to save souls. And so she ended up, she actually is the one of the patron saint of missions.
Yeah.
Which is funny because she never left the convent.
Right.
But right. She was a missionary in the sense of, she was just, you know, she said she actually promised, she said she would spend her heaven doing good on earth.
Right.
You know, so she is on a mission to bring others to Christ and to salvation. Because once you have that, you know, that burning love for the Lord and that relationship, you want everyone to share in that.
Yes, definitely. And you know, you talk about the claustrophobia that you probably feel in a convent when you're stuck there forever. One of the things that struck me in her book, her autobiography, Story of a Soul, which definitely everyone should read, she talked about when she was 15, she went on this pilgrimage to Rome, and she took a train from Lisieux over the Alps. And she said she looked at the Alps realizing she would never, ever see them again. And that kind of struck me as like, wow, like imagine going through your world and thinking, I'm never going to see this ever again. Like, this is the last Chipotle I will ever eat in my life. Like, that'd be hard to know that you have like 70 more years to live and you can never eat Chipotle or never see the mountains or never, you know, whatever it is, never see, you know, never hug your father for the next 70 years of your life. That would be so hard. But that was a sacrifice she's willing to embrace just to make it for life and immolation to the Lord.
Yeah, the mortification, just, you know, I think that she challenges her readers to, you know, to grow in that dying to self, because there are just lots of, you know, you never make it in the spiritual life. I think people want to check the box of like, yeah, I got this virtue.
Good at fasting, yes.
You know?
Good at humility.
Yeah, the thing is that virtues can be lost, you know? Like, even if we're committing venial sin and it's something small,
that's the frustrating part. The spiritual life is like whack-a-mole.
It is.
You hit one down and then another one pops up and you're like, man.
Yeah.
Thought I was making progress.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's not just about doing good acts, like good acts exteriorly.
Yeah.
Obviously, it matters sort of the intention, right?
Right.
Ultimately, we should, you know, like get to the point of, and what St. Therese, you know, a lot of times we do things because, oh, well, what's in it for me, right? But we have to give without counting the cost, like Christ did.
Yeah.
And she, I think just a lot of the examples, I actually have a few from her autobiography, which I thought were funny and interesting.
She does have some wit, yeah.
Yeah. You know, she, like, for example, one day she was, I guess the sisters, you know, they obviously have to do chores, right? And they wash their own laundry. There's actually a picture of her, and she's smiling next to the sister, but she writes in her autobiography that, you know, she was smiling on the outside, but interiorly she was like, oh gosh, I don't want to stand next to this woman. But she made herself, because this, you know, I think to your point, she was from a well-to-do family, probably never had to wash her own clothes.
Yeah.
This particular sister would just splash, you know, she would be soaked from it. And yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because, you know, St. Therese, part of her background too as a child, she really, I think she was quite spoiled just because of, you know, her
youngest
mother.
Of five. Yeah. Daughter, definitely the apple of her daughter's eye,
father's eyes. And, you know, she was the youngest. All of her sisters were taking care of her because her mother had passed away.
Yeah, she had five moms, four moms.
They had a lot of money, you know, and so she did have quite a temper. I mean, there's a lot of talk about that in terms of just the way that she reacted to things in childhood. If something didn't go her way, it was like, the world is ending. So it's just fascinating to see the transformation, you know, in through that growth in Christ. Because her father, too, I think during the childhood, I mean, he was a very devout man.
Both her father and mother are saints.
Right,
St. Louis and Zelie Martin.
Yeah, and I think they both actually, her father had attempted to join the monastery.
Right.
But he couldn't, to my recollection, learn Latin well enough.
That was it, yeah.
So he was like, all right, this is not for you. And her mother as well, I believe, had tried to join the convent. I don't remember what her reason for leaving. But yeah, they met. And, you know, they've lived, I think, you know, just outside of St. Therese, the two parents are beautiful examples of sort of what a Catholic household should look like. Of just you know, they were praying constantly with their children. I know that when her mother passed away, she would go to school, St. Therese would go to school during the day, and then her father would take her for a walk in the evening, and they'd stop by the chapel for adoration every evening. And so, you know, clearly to go from this child who the world is ending if you take a pencil away to, you know, someone who is just looking for every opportunity to mortify herself, to put herself in these situations that she wouldn't choose, like she doesn't desire, but for love of the Lord is, to me is just a testament to the way that grace, you know, works and how God takes, you know, that goodwill that St. Therese had of, okay, I want to do all these things for you, and he makes that blossom.
I think part of that too is a lot of people don't realize St. Therese's full name in the convent is St. Therese of the Little Child, you know, the Child Jesus. And so she really practiced spiritual childhood in the sense of, like, you know, recognizing her inability to do good things. And so she's like, I'm just going to surrender and just become like a child. Because I think if we rely on our own will to overcome our own faults, we stumble, we fall. There's no way in which we can. Some faults are just too big for us to just grit our teeth and, you know, power through.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's the other beautiful thing about our spirituality that I am drawn to, because, you know, we probably all struggle with it to an extent, is just surrender to God's will, to confidence and to trust. But she had, you know, I think something that like really comes through in the story of a soul is her just utter trust in God for, you know, she wasn't intimidated or discouraged by any of her, you know, so-called defects. She really just gave them to the Lord and said, I can't do this, but I can do all things with Christ. And she really believed that. And it comes through in everything that she writes about. And you can see just the way that, you know, she probably didn't even recognize it necessarily in herself on a day-to-day basis. But from childhood to, you know, the time that she passed away, just the transformation that God worked in her. But yeah, to just, you know, to let go of control and to allow God to work, for me, that's difficult sometimes because I like to plan things out. I like to, I think we all have a tendency to want to control the outcome, but that worry and fear that come along with trying to control things really, I think, stifles and prevents you from spiritually growing.
Yeah. I feel like there's a special grace, and I think that's why they talk about religious life is actually higher than Docetan priesthood and higher than the married life in terms of like pure opportunity for perfection because of those vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, and particularly the vow of obedience where you really say that your will no longer exists. Mm-hmm. You know, is a really cool grace, and Therese lived that out so perfectly, right? That perfect obedience, in fact. It amazes me that she was named novice master at like 21 years old. I mean, that's so young, you know, but they saw in her somebody who lived the rule so perfectly that she could now advise the young novices at 16, 17 about how to live it because she had so interiorized that giving up of one's will, that the will of the rule of the convent was everything she needed. And I love, there's a great reading from St. Gregory the Great in the Office of Readings, and he was a monk, and he had to give it up because God called him to be a bishop and then the Pope. And he laments about how the fact that he said, when I was in the monastery, it was so much easier to be holy, he said, because he could just didn't have to talk about secular things. He just could sit there and pray all day and just like follow the rule. And that was it. That's all he had to deal with. And he says that when he became Pope, now he has to deal with worldly people. And he says, because of the weakness of my nature, my tongue, you know, goes on too long and I start to gossip and this and that. I can't focus on my prayers because I have to take care of all the administrative stuff. So I hope, and I'm sure, you know, there is with Therese's little way, that those who are not cloistered and who are in the midst of the world can still find holiness when you are distracted by 1,000 worldly things. Because I'm sure you're distracted by 1,000 worldly things. You're even more in the world than I am.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you definitely have to make more of an effort, right, to make time daily for prayer, for those things that are going to give you that life, you know, in the relationship with the Lord. But I think, yeah, when I was younger, I felt like, oh, yeah, holiness is really only possible for these nuns and, you know, priests and all that stuff. They got all this scheduled prayer time and the jealousy flowing.
It does make it easier. I'm not going to lie.
No, it definitely does. It does. But, you know, like everything, I mean, I make a morning offering each morning of my day, all the sorrows, joys, sufferings for the salvation of souls, you know, for my family, for specific intentions. So
have you tried to put into practice the little way of St. Therese?
Yeah, absolutely. Just in terms of even just at work, right? Of the way that I deal with colleagues who are not necessarily, you know, sometimes people are in moods and, you know, it's just, I think I do see a change in the way that I react now versus, okay, just remembering, you know, what? No, I'm going to love this person, not, you know, for how I feel about them, but for God's sake, right? Of treating them as they are in the image and likeness of God. And so that is not easy when your emotions, you know, kind of go up and down and but there are so many, I don't know, I think there's a lot more opportunity to work on rooting out vice and building virtue in the world. You don't have to be in a convent. I mean, there's you can recollect God throughout the day. I know Father Ripperger recommends just saying, you know, constantly repeating, I love you, God, I love you, God. And so that, like, you know, that simple prayers like that can just flame your desire.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Of the will.
And I think God gives you extraordinary grace if you want to live it in a more challenging environment, such as working at a, you know, accounting firm or.
Yeah, absolutely.
Living in the midst of the world.
Yeah, and I've just seen the doors that he's opened. Like, I started a rosary and monthly rosary at PWC, and you know, just we have a, sort of a Christian general subchapter working on starting a Catholic thing. It's like, you know, sometimes it takes years to see where or why God has you and the place that He has you, but to live each moment faithfully, the sacrament of the present moment, right? Just not thinking too much about the future and not worrying about the past, but taking advantage of every moment that you're given.
Yeah. Amen. That is the little way in a nutshell, right? Because every moment is an opportunity to love.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, being open about your faith at work, with your friends, everything. I mean, you're exposing people to Christ and to the gospel and to a completely different way of living. And you might be the only person that they ever encounter who, you know, can show them that path or open that door. So,
yeah.
You know, constantly praying for the grace to be able to be led by the Spirit to, you know, proclaim the truth, to live in that holy example, and to, you know, speak words when the time, you know, is necessary.
Definitely. And I think there's, in St. Therese's example, that, you know, shows that holiness is for ordinary people. You don't have to do something remarkable, you know, which is good, because I really think in heaven, we're going to hear stories that make, like, some of the great stories in our faith just pale in comparison. You know, we're going to hear about these ordinary people whose names will never be known, they'll never be canonized saints, who just live such extraordinary lives in such a humble circumstance that nobody knew outside of their circle of influence.
Yeah, which is beautiful.
And I don't know, I think I've shared this story on Restless before, but it's worth retelling. When I was at Franciscan University, you know, they have a convent of they had purchased a monastery out in Austria in Gomming, which was a Carthusian monastery. And they were doing some work on it during my freshman year, and they uncovered 4 bodies of incorrupt monks.
Wow.
Because they, I guess they were, you know, buried with wooden crosses or something, and they've rotted over the years, and there was no notice of who these monks were. So four incorrupt saints, right? Nobody knows who they are. And I'm like, wow, you know, when I hear those stories about these saint, someone is so-and-so, that's going to be amazing on that day. You know, hear these saint stories. And even just like, you know, ordinary parents who are raising kids amidst difficult circumstances, or kids who are heroically living out their faith in public school, right? Things like that, that are really living the little way of Saint Therese, not in a big way. There's going to be some cool stories.
I can't wait for those stories to be unraveled.
I can't wait either. But, you know, Saint Therese being in heaven is a great intercessor. Have you ever asked for her intercession?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely ask all the time just for specific graces. I mean, I've never received a rose. I think sometimes if you ask for signs, they can be kind of confusing to interpret.
Yes, that's so true.
I've certainly asked for roses, but it's like, okay, I asked for a certain color and it's like, is that just there, or, you know, am I just seeing this because I'm at a store, you know,
right, that sells they flowers. Always have red roses.
Right, yeah, exactly. But in all seriousness, you know.
You pray to Saint Therese and then go to the florist shop. Well, I mean, of course, what are you going to expect?
Yeah, it's like, oh, let me find the color that I was at.
Yeah, that's right. Do you have a blue rose?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah,
that one would be hard.
Yeah, try to do a little bit more distinct.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
No, but in all seriousness, I really pray to her a lot for surrender, because that's something that I think that I need to work on in terms of just, yeah, giving everything openly and freely to the Lord and not worrying about, you know, all these future. I'm a planner, so I worry about things in the future. And so I pray to her for that grace. And I'm confident that she does hear, because she was so on fire for souls. And, you know, she said that she promised that she would spend her heaven doing good on earth. So.
Yes. And from the testimony of so many people, it sounds like she definitely has.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard tons of stories of these roses and, you know, like her examples of her intercession. So
yeah,
I think she's a great one to ask, you know, just for that childlike confidence, surrender, anything.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Anything that's in conformity with God's will.
Definitely. So Therese of Lisieux is one of the relics that we just inserted in our altar at St. Jude's in my parish.
Oh, no way.
Little way. Little no way, which is... So I have to grow in devotion to her. And honestly, you know, I read the Story of a Soul first when I was in college, and that's when I was like, ugh. But I read it again last year, and I was in a much better spiritual place. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of good stuff in here. And I came to a greater appreciation for really some of the real heroism that she practiced, you know, because I guess probably when I read it in college, I was looking for a saint that did mighty deeds. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she didn't, but that's good, because I'm not going to do mighty deeds, but...
Yeah, so she's an example.
Yeah.
She was a fiery spirit, too. I mean, when she went to that pilgrimage in Rome that her father took her to, because she was too young to enter the convent at the time.
15 years old, yeah.
15, yeah. And she,
I didn't know what else to have for breakfast at 15. How did...
She had an audience of the Pope, and, you know, she basically just blurted out. They were like, don't say anything, don't say anything. And she blurts out, please, you know, give me, can I get permission to enter Carmel? And, you know,
yeah,
that takes a lot of courage. And you could just, I love the grit and the determination there. She was so, she had this goal. She wanted to achieve it, and she was willing to do anything to get there. You know, and she was abandoned to God's will. I mean, I'm sure she would have, you know, if he hadn't opened the door, and he didn't immediately. But I just think that she is she's someone that, you know, like we all need to kind of kindle that flame within ourselves, you know, to do whatever the Lord has asked us to do.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, we were talking about the fiery spirit. I guess what I think is very interesting is that there's another sister of St. Therese that's on the path to canonization. Did you know that?
No.
I think she's a venerable now.
Okay.
Yeah. So Therese was the youngest of five girls. All five became nuns.
Yep.
But one of them did not become a Carmelite. Her name was Leonie.
Right. I remember one was the black sheep.
Yeah. If you could call a visitation sister a black sheep. But apparently she was. Apparently she was the headstrong one. She was the one that was really, like, the personality was very different. And recent studies have kind of, you know, just from different writings have said, you know, maybe she was on the autism spectrum in some way, shape, or form. But she's actually on the path to canonization too. And I like that example of, like, wow, she was a nonconformist and can become a saint, you know, because she's like, you guys all think Carmel's so cool. No, I'm joining another
convent. See you later.
I mean, granted, it's not that big a rebellion, I suppose. If she, you know, became a Protestant, that'd be much worse. But it's great to see that Therese came from a family, you know, because really vocations come from a family and saints come from families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, You think there's other saints who have had parents that are saintly.
Absolutely.
You know, I think of St. Augustine and St. Monica, right? And, you know, of course, Benedict and Scholastica were brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these great saint pairs, Cosmas and Damian, were brothers. And,
yep.
And so it grows in a family. So if you have a family, you know, make your family center around Christ and you'll see amazing graces coming from that.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, that's another example of just how do you live, you know, your everyday life with extraordinary love. Those parents did it, everything for God, for their children, and five of them ended up in the convent.
So. Yeah. It was just really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Praise God. Well, thanks so much for joining us in this episode of Restless. Go and get to know St. Therese. Read her autobiography. It's a very easy read, A Story of a Soul. And if you already have a devotion to her, ask her intercession and ask her to pray for me, because I need her intercession.
Me too.
And Diane as well. You can find us on 1350 AM, Veritas Catholic Network, also 103.9 FM, and wherever you get your podcasts. So tune in next time to Restless.